Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. At the top of the program, like, subscribe, review if you feel the inclination. My guest this week is Adam Ryan of In All Airness Podcast. We're talking about The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2 that came out, Monday night, 2 nights ago. I really enjoyed it, but we talk about that in length. But if you've come to this Bulls team or basketball of the 90s even with interest or new interest, you have to go to Apple Podcasts and type In All Airness or Adam Ryan and subscribe and listen to all or some of his episodes. He chronicles the Bulls impeccably, both accurately and extensively. It's all there, and they're a great listen. Adam and I talk about how he got the credit in this documentary, and when I saw it on Twitter, teased, and then to see it actually in writing, I sent an immediate message to Adam. I mean, I thought it was really incredible that someone from Coffs Harbour could be in the biggest documentary of, well, ever, and have such a prominent credit. But Adam talks about that in length. I won't delay it anymore. Everyone, here is Adam Ryan of In All Airness Podcast.
Yep, it was pretty nice to see. So
phone's ringing off the hook. So what's next? You know, you got Tarantino on one phone and
got Woody Allen on the other. That's no worry.
I nearly fell off my chair when I saw it because I'd seen it on Twitter and I thought someone was pulling your leg. And then I watched it and I thought there. And you get the it's like your credit goes on for days. It's like Adam Ryan. Brackets In All Airness Podcast. And I laughed because you talked about how the name, you were like, oh, I'm pretty certain there it is. Parentheses, yeah. In All Airness Podcast. I was like, that draws the eye. So
yeah,
that,
now I can't change my name anytime soon, can I?
You're stuck. It's like Bob Ross the painter. He got the afro and that was it. You had to stay with it. Didn't like it.
I'm done.
Blanket statement. First of all, like, why'd you get the credit? Why do you think you did?
Well, I provided some very minor, I should add, historical context to the documentary for one of the researchers or the assistants to a director on the film. So through my Instagram account, I was reached out to by one of the guys that's part of the production, and he asked about the whereabouts of the photo that I put on Instagram, and a couple of other things he queried as well as to what was the context behind it. So I just replied back with the details of it. A few of them came from a few books that I've had for many, many years, a couple of ones that are pretty hard to come by these days. And I just explained where they came from, what the context was of the said photo. And then also they came across my social media presence, I guess, with YouTube and a few of the clips I've been sharing of video clips and things that I've obtained over the years, either via trades with people or that I've purchased VHS tapes from people many, many years ago from the States. And just digitized some of that content. So they queried where it came from and could they use it in the production if they didn't find the original source.
Right.
Oh, well, so that's how that came to be. So I was pretty surprised and pleased at the same time. And then they said near the end, do you want to have your name in the credits? And I said, I'd love to have my name in the credits.
Twist my arm. You know, the biggest documentary of the 21st century. Sure, why not? Oh, it's great.
And that was pretty cool. So I was very, very pleased. And I had forgotten about that actually happening. And then because we didn't get to see The Last Dance, at least via Netflix here in Australia, until like 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon as we're recording this. It went to air 5 or 6 hours earlier in the States. And a few people had reached out to me on Twitter or Instagram and had said, do you realize that you appear in the credits? And I thought, oh, what? And I forgot about it. And then looked how it said, you know, Anna's podcast in the brackets, as you said. And I was pretty pumped to see that in there because that always helps to get a bit of reach for those that look in the credits at the end.
Absolutely. I mean, I was just, and am I okay to say you're in Coffs Harbour?
I'll cut it out. Absolutely, mate. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, the idea that a guy doing a podcast in Coffs Harbour, you know, which is, you know, a nice place, I'm very sure, but a world away from the United States and Chicago, could, you know, I was just sort of that sort of serendipity, I guess is the word I'd use for it. I just thought that was amazing and congrats. Do you know what the sort of, was there a particular vintage of photograph or video that they were looking to you for, like more the early stuff or the late stuff or a bit of everything?
Well, I think it was more the early stuff. Right. There was a photo they show of, and I don't know if they ended up getting the one I actually provided or they found the original in a book somewhere once I told them where it was, but there's one of Jerry Krause, which they showed a couple of close-ups of where he's standing next to Stan Albeck at a blackboard, I think, or some board pointing at something. That's one of the ones that I remember talking to them about. There's also another photo where it does a close-up of just Jordan where he's like in some sort of college shirt, and it's a big close-up of him as a school kid. There's also another kid in the photo with him, but they've just cropped him out, and it's just Jordan. But they were like some of the most likely to succeed people in their high school class at that time that photo was from. So I didn't necessarily uncover it to begin with, but I certainly sourced it and then
uploaded them.
And then they've been shared around, and someone said, well, it's come from here. So they've said, can I get some more details? And that's how those came to be.
Tell me, like, right, I think we've discussed this last time, but like, just to be real quick about this, like, how many games of the Bulls do you think you've watched at a pure number of plus one of the sky?
Oh, in full or just part?
In part.
Well, in part, probably 800-900 maybe.
800-900, that's quite.
I've got about almost in my collection at least 1,000 Jordan games.
Wow.
So I've probably watched them. I've probably watched more than 1,000, but. Full games, you're well into the hundreds as far as the complete games, but certainly lots of highlights and bits and pieces that I've crewed over the time, which I just haven't edited together yet, which I will in some time, but it's a long process, but it'll happen eventually.
And newsreels and stuff. What about the books? And I'll just quickly reel them off. You read The Jordan Rules?
Yes.
Second Coming?
No.
No?
No, oh, no, there's actually a few I haven't. I haven't finished Michael Jordan, The Life, if you can believe that.
Is that Roland Lazenby? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
That's one I haven't read either. I've read Second Coming, all Sam Smith stuff. What about Driven From Within, that picture book?
Yes, I have.
What about Haberstan's one? I don't know.
Playing for Keeps, that's a ripper.
You've read that?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely awesome. And actually,
I've read Bill Winnington's as well. I think it was Running with the Bulls. That was
No, Luke Longlist is Running with the Bulls. Bill Winnington had one which was Tales from the Bulls Locker Room.
That's what I've read. I've read that one too.
And that I've only seen snippets of that because it's hard to come by. So I'll actually have to try and get in touch with Bill and see if I can get a copy.
Yeah, I bought it in Chicago when I was there. Just to give context of where, like, my understanding of the Bulls, like I'm 87, so I miss early Jordan. I'm 11 or 12 when I catch the tail on, but you knew even at that young age what was going on. It was pretty special.
Oh, absolutely.
You're older.
Yeah, I am, mate. I'm 45 in June. So you were
at the ripe age. Mid teens or whatever.
Yeah. I've reeled this off previously on my podcast, but on the day that Jordan hit the last shot in Utah in 1998 in game 6, I turned 23 on that day. So,
good age.
That's matching his jersey number on the day he wins the title, mate, in his last game for the Bulls. Wow. So can't go better than that.
Here's a question for you that's a bit more existential for you, Adam. But if you could trade your Jordan experience and the Bulls experience you had being in Australia and, you know, a little bit removed, but perhaps a little bit more romantic, would you trade that to be like a kid in the heart of Chicago and be there? Like, is there any part of you are you jealous of kids or people who got to live it? Or do you kind of quite like your distant perspective from it?
I think it's a great question to begin with, and I've never even been asked that or been posed that before. So that's, yeah, a great question. But I, in one way, would enjoy having had that experience, but I wouldn't trade who I am and what I've done to this point in my life. So I love actually that, and I think it works in my favor a little bit that I'm based here in Australia, because when I reach out and chat to some of these players and former coaches and media and whatever else, the fact that I am in Australia, I think just adds to the allure perhaps from people who get asked all the time, can you come on my podcast? Can you talk about your experiences? Because they probably know that I'm going to be fairly well researched or at least have some fair idea on their history, because to start with, I'm calling from the other side of the world. So that always helps. But yeah, it's a tantalizing question. But long story short, I'd still keep everything as it is.
Yeah, I think the idea of the prism of watching it from Australia is very, you got less, but what you got, it was like sometimes, you know, there's an affinity for the Warriors, or the less you have, the more you appreciate. I know that was certainly my case, where if something was even a sniff of Jordan and these Bulls, it was just, you just hoovered it up, you know. So
yeah, you're spot on, mate. That's exactly what happened throughout the 90s here in Australia. Whatever we got, we cherished, and less was sometimes more back then, because you just hung on every second of video footage that you got. NBA on Channel 10, going back to NBA on ABC, even back before that. I mean, so many great memories. So it's, one's the saver.
Let's talk about Last Dance. So you've seen both episodes. How many times have you watched each episode?
I've watched them both twice. Same. since I went on air, and I've done notes on both of them. Same. Pretty extensive notes.
Your notes are pretty, how many pages of notes you got, Adam? How many pages?
I've got it back. Yeah, I've got 2 pages on each episode.
All right, I've got about 3/4 of a page on each. So
both very sad indictments on what we're doing.
Very sad. I think mine are fractionally more legible than yours, ever so fraction. I've got handwriting. You've got handwriting. You use your own words for it, but mine's more like, if you've read Kurt Cobain's book about where he's just got scrawlings of crazy handwriting. Anyway, that's what mine looked like. Yours, I don't know. It's somewhere in the middle. I don't know.
Yeah, mine are quite messy, but somewhat organized, but certainly messy looking. As you said, I think they look like a doctor's written them. So I've got some work to do in the handwriting department, mate, as a former teacher.
Yeah, I see. You got a profession as a doctor ahead of you for sure. Tell me, right. these two episodes, did you mainly watch as like, how did it rate one as an entertainment value for you against like all those NBA entertainment videos we know and love? And how did it rate for you as a historical document? Let's talk about entertainment first. Like, did you find it like enthralling, entertaining, suspenseful?
Yeah, I definitely found it enthralling. Probably took me about 5 to 10 minutes at best to be able to lean in and actually sit up from the couch a bit and just watch totally in awe sometimes of some of the footage, because some of this was new. I've noticed some people are saying, oh, nothing much really new, but there were numerous snippets of stuff that's never been seen before that I've certainly come across, and I've seen quite my fair share of Jordan material over the years. But I thought it was just beautifully put together. It's expertly edited. I can't imagine how much time has gone into the editing of this, and I love how it flashes back between the 97-98 season, which of course is the backbone, I guess, of the series, but then goes back way to even up 1968 or something, where Jordan's a kid, and right through to the present day with their interviews and everywhere in between. It's fantastic.
As a historical document, like accurately depicting the time, are you pretty confident that this is like you'd point to it in a history class?
Yeah, I think this is pretty accurate. The only real small point that I'll probably take exception to is the fact about the minutes restrictions that they talk about that Jordan had when he came back from his injury in 1986, just due to the series that Aaron and a friend of mine, great friend of mine in Melbourne, and myself did, called NBA 86, shameless self-promotion, sorry, on my podcast. We researched the 1986 NBA season, and whilst it was true to say that in the first few games back, Jordan had a 7 minute per half restriction, by the time the regular season ended, he was up into the high teens and into the early to mid-20s in terms of minutes per game. So slight exaggerations there, I guess, but it certainly was amazing when they showed that footage of the game at Indiana where Jordan was fuming on the bench with about 30 seconds left, just wanting to go back in a one-point game.
And the hand-holding. I thought that was who's that player and what's his story? I thought it was Oakley. It's not. His surname starts with a B. You'd know
Gene
who
Banks.
Was it.
Yep,
and what was his relation to Jordan? Were they, because I'd never heard of him. Is he like close, not close? Was it a religious moment? I got a vibe.
I actually don't know. It was interesting how, Gene reached out his hand. It took a couple of seconds for Jordan to realize. Actually, I saw it and thought, hang on, is he holding his hand out? And then, Jordan held onto his hand there. I think might have been John Paxson in between them. And just a bit of a moment of solitude, I guess, to sort of, and solidarity, I suppose, to say, we're here with you. We've got this, and we'll try and go on the court and. And as it happened to turn out, Paxson hit the would-be game winner. And it was awesome to see Jordan come off the bench and was dishing out high fives and hugs as they left the court. So fantastic footage. That game's never been seen before. So that's the sort of stuff that is so telling when you can just see it all happen in film.
One thing I have a question for you, Adam, and I don't know if you brought this up with your guys you've had from NBA Entertainment, but when there's that old footage, predominantly baseline footage looking up, and Jordan will do a dunk or a layup or whatever it is, and the camera will have in frame the lights of the roof, and when the camera kind of moves with Jordan, the lights kind of streamer in the footage. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they sort of have like a flare of sorts or something. I know what you mean. Yeah, I don't know how.
Is it because they're shooting on film, or that's something I got to ask someone, like, because that's an effect you just, it's of its time. It doesn't happen anymore with digital or high HD. It has this weird streamer effect, and it's just, it's so fun. I don't know what it is. It's always captured my imagination why that happens, but
I'm not actually sure why that is the case. I know that for the 97-98 season we're talking about, Andy Thompson, who's the brother of Michael Thompson, who's the NBA entertainment guy that basically came up with the idea to do this in the first place, to follow them around for the whole year, they made the very wise choice to record all this footage, the 500 hours of unseen footage on film, so that whatever happens going forwards, whenever it actually came to be, if it came to be, they'd be able to digitize it so that it was HD, able to be played in the best quality possible.
Clever. Let's talk about a couple of choice things from what I took this. I was shocked to see no Sam Bowie interview. Do you think that's surprising, what you know of him? Or is he is still alive? I looked up quickly on Wikipedia. Yeah. Were you surprised not to see him, or is he a tortured soul?
Well, probably a bit of both. He might make an appearance later on. I'm knowing that because of the nature of them going backwards and forwards in time throughout this series, I wouldn't be surprised if he may come into it a bit later. Interestingly, for some people, Bowie actually did a couple of training sessions and workouts with the Bulls in the mid-90s, almost joined the team at one stage. So that would have been quite fascinating. Had he joined the team and actually been teammates with Jordan at one stage. So, but anyhow, yeah, it's a little bit surprising they maybe didn't get a bit of a comment from him, but he has his own documentary that's been done.
Does he?
For the life of me, I can't think of it was. But it was about his career at back in college, how he had to play that extra year because of injuries when he broke his leg. And, of course, his future injury troubles, but it'll come to me. But yeah, so I guess that's been covered a little bit, but it might come up in the future. Something I was surprised I didn't touch more on, they mentioned the trade of Charles Oakley and Bill Cartwright, but for some reason, and it could still be coming, the fact that Oakley wasn't actually asked specifically about that trade, given he appeared in episodes 1 and 2. So that's a bit strange. I didn't elaborate a bit more, but perhaps that's down the road a bit.
I have a question for you as well. Like, this was one of the first things said by Jerry Reinsdorf when he was on camera. And he goes, other than Michael, the others were probably at the end of their high productive years. And that's strange. Obviously talking about 98. Do you think that's fair? Like, Pippen had that back issue. I watched just recently game 7 of these conference finals against Indiana. It certainly looked like it was like the burden on Jordan was bigger than at any time. Do you agree? Would I go, if I went one step further and said that, yeah, let's go with that. Would you say Pippen and that were at a high production, or do you disagree with Reinsdorf?
I initially thought it was a strange comment for him to make. As we saw, Jordan still came back and played at age 39, 40, some 5 years later, retired for the best part of 3 years when Tim Floyd became the coach of the Bulls in 99. But Pippen's back injuries and his nagging injuries are what really derailed what could have been a really productive few more years for him. And that said, he still got to the Western Conference Finals in 2000 as a member of the Blazers. So he was still playing at a really high level, but I guess he was Rodman. Always going to be hampered. Rodman
was kind of done in 98. I didn't see a lot of him in that game 7, and he was 37.
He bounced around to a few teams and eventually sort of saw his way out of the league. So, yeah, I think the really interesting part was that Jerry Krause all but was pulling the strings on everything as the puppet master, saying ahead of the 98 season, this will be Phil Jackson's last season as coach and we'll be going in a different direction. That's after they've won the 5th title. They're heading for a 6th title possibly. And he's eliminating, saying straight up, even if you went 82-0, it's not happening. Phil Jackson's leaving at the end of this season. So their relationship obviously was very tumultuous by the end of the Bulls' reign, as opposed to when he first actually hired Phil Jackson back in the mid-1980s when he first came into the Bulls organization. So, yeah, quite jarring.
I heard Paul Shirley, who wrote a book called Can I Keep My Jersey, who's kind of got a dry wit and sort of on the peripheries of the NBA, but brilliant writer. He described in an interview Phil Jackson as the most arrogant person he's ever met. You've read a lot of books and stuff. Do you get that impression about Phil Jackson as his time with the Bulls matures and his status increases? Did you get an arrogance from him? I kind of did with the Laker years, but perhaps not so much in the Bulls years. But what do you think?
I don't think I really did that much with the Bulls. I just thought he was a very confident person and he was quite level-headed. And obviously, given his Zen Master nickname, he definitely went through a lot and had to balance so many different personalities on that team with the Bulls. And with the Lakers, of course, with Kobe, Shaq and whatnot. So I don't think so, but I haven't read the book that you're talking about, but I know that Paul Shirley was a one-time Chicago Bull and definitely played for a lot of teams, hence the book name, I guess. So
he did meet Phil when he was with the Lakers, which maybe they could be two different people, Phil Jackson at the Bulls and the Lakers. But
he could be spot on, I'm not sure, but I didn't get that opinion and I haven't had that opinion over the years, but everybody's entitled to one, yeah.
What about like this, a lot of people are sort of saying that this film is, or the first two episodes are really portraying Jerry Krause as the villain. Do you think that's, from what you've read, do you think that's a fair description of Krause? And do you feel like that was the depiction that the first two episodes were making?
I actually felt bad for Jerry Krause's family when I was watching this. I thought it was, it was quite rough to actually watch and hear some of the stuff that they were saying. Now, towards in, I think, the end of episode two, they were starting to sing his praises a little bit, but basically it was 85 to 90% derogatory and, yeah, quite jarring. I know I've said that word a few times, but to see that and to see Kraus portrayed that way, I know that the players were saying he couldn't get out of his own way and he had a big ego and whatnot, but given that he's since passed on, I felt bad for his family, and I hope that in future episodes they certainly focus on and at least bring light to the fact that he assembled one of the all-time great teams, and through his prowess as a GM, none of that actually would have probably come to be had it not been for some of those crucial decisions he made.
I think that one thing I didn't like about it was sort of they were like, oh, you know, we didn't like Jerry Krause because he was a bit abrasive and, you know, he tried to trade players. And I was like, well, hang on, you've just described every GM in every sport everywhere. So I think there was a sort of a, somewhat of a misunderstanding of what his role with the team was as well from a player standpoint. The other person who I, to me, more than Jerry Krause, despite maybe the effort of the documentary, I got a real sort of, I thought it was sort of, Pippen was a bit of a villain in this. The way he sort of, selfish was the word thrown around, and certainly the delaying of the surgery is reminiscent of Shaq with the foot in the 2000s. But also if he could realize that playing with Jordan and Phil and the Bulls was really special to him, I just don't think he, I think he could or should have been able to push the his friction with Krause to one side. But it seems as though I really came out disliking Pippen after this. Did you feel the same way or not so much?
Well, not so much in terms of dislike him, because I'm a massive Pippen fan.
Of course. But,
it was really interesting to hear the entire background on Pippen's family as well. I knew that his father had suffered a stroke, I think, you know, when he was a young, maybe 10 or 11 years old, and was wheelchair bound basically for the rest of his life. But I didn't know that about his second oldest brother being in a wheelchair as well after getting paralyzed in a PE class when he was in high school. But I think that Pippen was kind of torn because he initially signed that 7-year, 18 mil deal or whatever it was, and it gave him great financial security. He also admitted to the fact that it actually helped him look after his own people, which obviously being his family and I guess close friends. But by the time 1995, 6, 7 rolled around, when he realized the amount of money that he probably lost out on by having that long-term deal, it's a bit of a, oh, should I have done this? Should I not have done that? And then when he did put off his surgery to basically spite Krause ahead of the 98 season, that was tough to even sort of hear him reflect on and say that he wanted to enjoy his summer.
It soured me, Adam. I was like, you know,
that's tough.
If you could look Jordan in the face and say, I know we're friendly. I know we're teammates. I know we're going for a sixth championship, but I really don't like this guy. I couldn't do it to a colleague or a teammate or a friend. I just couldn't do that. I'd say, oh, I'm all right. You know, I still hate him. We're not going to be friends, but I'd still, you know. Yeah. That kind of soured me a little bit.
And also Phil Jackson was surprisingly, it just seemed to be he was on Pippen's side a little bit. Obviously, Phil understood the scenario, but he seemed to not mind as much that Pippen delayed his surgery until maybe a month before the season. And he understood that it was trying to be Pippen's way to get back at Krause after all those years. So, yeah, it's a fine balancing act, but it certainly would put the Bulls' sixth title in jeopardy early on because they have to win enough games during the regular season to be able to have a good seeding come playoff time and particularly the NBA Finals, which they missed out on home court in because they didn't have a good enough record by the time the end of the regular season came about.
Small gripe from me was when they had Wennington and Kerr and I think Phil all say like, oh, you know, Scotty crossed the line with some of the comments. And I thought, well, if you've got 500 hours of footage on the bus, and that's where it seemed to a lot of the crossing of the line took place, I was excited to see it. And maybe that's just because I like gossip or, you know, SHIT talk, but I thought that was, I wanted to know what crossed the line because we saw Jordan and that making fun about his weight and his size and, you know, poking fun at him in the press. Like, so I was kind of like, well, what constitutes crossing the line? So my question to you, Adam, is did you ever read anything that sort of said what that crossing the line was from Pippen?
I can't recall things specifically of what I may have read in the past, but I found it interesting that they alluded to the fact, and it looked like it was building up towards the end of episode two where they were showing the bus footage and they were showing Krause and Pippen milling around and then they had the players and the coach talking about it. I thought, hang on, we're going to see something pretty crazy here and this could be where this unseen footage comes to be. but it might be just something they're looking to tease a bit, and in the future episodes they might actually focus on a bit more and show and play some of the audio. At least I'm hoping so, because these two episodes, whilst they did cover the build of Jordan's career and then they went into detail on Pippen for episode two, it also just helps set the scene, particularly for those who are younger, to know what all the hype was about and how the Bulls had won the five titles previous to that 1998 season. So I think it's a bit of trying to satiate those who were newer or younger to the game and those who already knew a lot about what had happened previously.
I can definitely, I think it really handled that marriage well. It teased, it gave a bit, it took a bit, it kept a bit. One thing I want to go with you quickly is when Jordan scores 63 against the Celtics in 86. Now that sequence is really well done in Come Fly With Me, you know, with that song, the drums and whatever. In this particular sequence, they used a song by LL Cool J, putting them side by side, which is perhaps unfair. But how did you feel those sequences were cinematically like? Because I always felt the version in Come Fly With Me really summed up the time, Jordan as a player, and the contest. Whereas I felt this was kind of like, it sort of shoehorned in a rap song that I didn't feel, I don't know, I felt a disconnect. Were you the same way or am I off my hinges?
No, you're not off your hinges. I think that I read that, you know, at least during his career, Jordan was never really a big rap or hip-hop fan. And I know that basketball highlights and hip-hop and rap, they can go together really well. I'm not a massive fan or even really a fan at all, to be honest, of that sort of music. It's just not my style. But, yeah, I can see how it would appeal to those who are watching it. I admit that it sounded pretty good as the highlights were happening, but it's a complete contrast to what we've known, as you said, with the previous footage we've seen through Come Fly With Me. So, yeah, it was quite a big contrast between the two. But, yeah, it's a bit of a take it or leave it for me, but I'm sure plenty of people would have enjoyed hearing the that more upbeat and perhaps more contemporary to some music that they enjoy to those highlights of Jordan and the Bulls back at that time.
I thought it was a little bit subversive as well, because that song came out in 87. So I thought, oh, maybe it's a rap song from the time and it's sort of planting it in the time. But then when I found out it came out a year or so later, I was like, oh, you know, semi-related to the time, I get it. But at the same time, I was like, oh, this feels... It just felt a little inauthentic to me, but and especially knowing, I think it's in the book When Nothing Else Matters, the one about his time with the Wizards. Like, I know there's an exact exchange with a player where he's like, I don't listen to rap. And he certainly said he didn't listen to rap before games because it got him too fired up or something, but I know that he wasn't a particular fan. So I just thought it was a missed opportunity to put in some Anita Baker, who I know he did listen to.
I was just thinking about it in the background as you were talking about it. Because so yeah, probably if you'd be listening to a bit of Anita Baker, give it your best. Just go out and give it your all.
Exactly. But maybe they're saving that. So you know, I'm not joking. Going to episode two, the bit I liked was, and I think it really speaks to today's game, where Jordan's talking about the lottery, where they're trying to bomb with him injured and get the lottery. And he's just like, you know, you play the game to win. I thought I saw that and almost was knocked backwards, because I thought if ever there was an advertisement for get rid of the draft lottery as we know it, reward winning at all costs, punish losing. Don't reward losing in any way. I thought that was it. The documentary seemed to really say that Jordan was really, it was palpably obvious that the organization was trying to tank for a draft pick. Was it that calculated by the front office in your research?
I think it's more speculation and hearsay perhaps, but you can certainly point to it and say that it is a possibility, but the fact that Jordan was such a maniacal competitor, even in his young years with the Bulls, it showed that he didn't want any part of a losing team. He even says during episode two, I believe, I wanted to make the playoffs in every year as a player. And if we had the chance to get to a playoffs, I was going to take every chance I could to make that playoff dream happen. So he was certainly going to try and circumvent anything that was perhaps planned through the front office or the head honchos above him. But definitely an interesting moment in time to be what could have happened had they missed the playoffs, enabled them to get a top seven lottery pick at the time, and what could have been from a pick they would have had there that would not have happened had they gone to the playoffs.
Let's jump back to, I think it was episode one, where the Jerry Krause, the famous line, players don't win championships, organizations win championships, and this sort of redacted alone, the line that takes the sting out of that line. Is that the case? Who was the reporter who apparently left off the alone, and is it true? Who's telling the truth?
I don't know. I'm going to have to do a deep dive on that because he seems to suggest, well, he basically throws another reporter under the bus to say that there was a word left off the quote. And he looked pretty riled up about it too. It was like, you know, he was seething basically as far as Kraus was concerned. And he wanted to make sure that he knew that he was really trying to say the entire organization, including players and the front office, et cetera, win the championships, not just the players. But yeah, it's an interesting one that I certainly need to do a bit more deep dive into before I'd be able to tell one way or the other what is the actual truth on that one.
It's a real schism moment. One thing at the start of the documentary, the four guys, five guys who they sit down with, the five players, Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Kukoc and Kerr. Are they the five that they sit down with, or is it no Kukoc and Kerr instead?
No Kukoc.
So the four. All right. So I found that odd. I found it odd that, not that those four are in there, but that Kukoc hasn't been sat down with, and that Longley hasn't been sat down with, a starter on the team. I mean, Kerr came off the bench. Obviously, he's more accessible because he lives in the United States. Longley doesn't. How do you feel with that? The fact that, you know, the story is really going to rotate around, obviously Jordan, obviously Pippen, but Rodman and Kerr thereafter at the exclusion of the other two? What do you think?
I hope that they do find some more details and get some more clips from some of these other players. Luke was interviewed for the series. He did tell me, I hope he doesn't mind me saying that. He did get interviewed a few years ago when he was over in the States, he told me. So hopefully some clips of him actually do make their way into this. I'd love to see him. He's such a down-to-earth and laid-back guy. It'd be an interesting take from an Australian to hear his thoughts on it. I know he does elaborate it on his book, Running with the Bulls, which has got some great stuff in there. So they would have been mad not to use some of the stuff that he had said in his book, but obviously they can't include everything. But I'd expect Kukoc to come into it a bit later on. They might even flash back to the 92 Olympics and talk a bit about how Jordan and Pippen were trying to dismantle him before he even became a member of the Bulls. Kerr, I guess, because of his high profile now, given his coaching.
He's a bridge. He's a bridge for the generations, I think.
So I think he then gets more front and center in terms of the availability and importance of him. He did some great things as a player, but clearly he's done a lot since then as well, which has helped get his cause, I guess, with some more airtime, I suppose. But I'd like to see some more of, you're going to see players like BJ Armstrong, who is a very close friend of Jordan. I'm sure he's going to come into it. There's going to be some other guys. Bill Cartwright, I'd be surprised if he doesn't get some airtime as well. So there'll be plenty of more characters that will make their way into it. And I'm sure that come episode three and beyond, once Rodman gets his time to shine, which I'm sure is coming very soon, we're going to start to see that sprinkling of other players that haven't yet appeared.
I think because you look at 98, like when you talk about the last dance, Kukoc steps up big time. He becomes a starter and a huge player, especially in that game seven I've watched just recently. That's the one that's on the mind. And then the other one is Longley. Like you watch the last 5 minutes of that game, and I'm sure most of the finals and playoffs, it's the last 5 minutes of you know, crunch time are steady diets of pick and roll with Jordan and Luke Longley. That is the staple Bulls offense at the end. And I'm hoping that one of these episodes, they talk about kind of like the triangle, as I understand it from what I've watched and seen, the triangle is really this offense to preserve Jordan for that moment. And then they pretty much go to one out Jordan, do what you do, get to the foul line, score. I'm hoping that one of the episodes is really like a Luke Longley and Jordan conversation about this strange thing that went on. Do you see the triangle? Like, do you see it the same way I do, where it was triangle for three quarters and a half and then it was Jordan time? Or do you see it as more like fully collaborative? I didn't see that looking back.
No, I think you're pretty accurate there, mate. I did show one brief bit of footage where it showed Longley in his red tracksuit pants and Jordan was sort of showing him a couple of suggestions for poaching up, it looked like. So, I'm hoping that they do show some more particular footage to do with Luke and some of the other big guys. You're going to probably hear from your Will Perdue's and Scott Williams, hopefully, those sort of guys back in the earlier 90s. I think that you're accurate with the way you describe it. I hope that we just get to see more of this footage from the 98 season, where it's just stuff that we've never seen before. They'd say there's 500 hours of footage to choose from. So I really hope that in amongst that, some of the stuff they're going to show is going to give us some particular insight in terms of either how the offense was run, hearing some of the players in particular talk about it. Another one that I'd love to hear from in some details, Randy Brown. He had a really interesting relationship with Jordan, I reckon, and a couple of championships he's run straight to him and gave him some massive hugs, and they've collapsed on the floor and embraced that way. So I think they had a pretty special relationship, and I'd love to know more about that and hopefully hearing it from some of these other guys, some of the lesser lights, that's going to be the most interesting for me.
Yeah, I was about to say, I sort of, just before this came out, I jotted down like nine of my sort of, a couple of my overarching questions that you're hoping to get answers to. Do you have one in particular or a couple that you're like, I do not know the answer to this question about the Bulls, despite all my own research, perhaps this documentary can answer that? Do you have that question?
That's a great question. I don't know if I really do. Like, I probably have some ones that, if I gave it a bit more thought, I probably have one, but I don't really think of one. I'd like to know what they're going to show, that there's hopefully some new footage or at least new interviews with people about the time when Jordan stepped away from the game for the 18 months and went and played baseball. It'd be good to hear some of the things about that, the full season that Pippen had, where he's basically at MVP level the whole season. And also, I'd like to see them do a bit more into the Bulls-Pistons rivalry. I know it's been, it has been covered on other documentaries or other programs in the past, but it'd be great to hear some, you know, reflections on that so many years on. So yeah, to answer that question, I'm not sure if there's a particular one that's come to mind. What's sort of the one for you that you'd love
for
to?
For me, I've got two.
Okay, what are
they? I mean, it's Phil Jackson calls it the last dance, and I'm sometimes life, it can come down to one word, and in this case, two letters or three. If only instead of the last dance, he'd said it, this is my last dance. If he'd impregnated from the start that I'm only here for 1 year, but this can go on. You don't, if he'd just been a little bit less, quote unquote, arrogant, or, you know, a little more like just self-important. I feel like I'm rubbishing Phil Jackson, but if he just, maybe it was my last dance or our last dance with us. If the wording had been different, this team could have kept going. Jordan was still the best player in basketball, mid-30s. Pippen was good, but you could retool. They wanted to trade for Kemp. Can you imagine Jordan and Kemp together? Maybe they win, maybe they don't, but this dance could have continued. And I feel like, how much did that saying, was it a self-fulfilling prophecy, the last dance? If it had been slightly different, could it have kept going? And my answer is really truthfully yes. And I feel like Jordan was the last guy at the table. I feel like he was the least powerful, funnily enough. Phil was out, Pippen was out, and Jordan's there like, I want to keep going. I've won the title. Well, let's defend it. And he's just standing there with his hands up and he goes, oh, I want to know how begrudging was his retirement. That's my big question.
Well, you make a great point. But the thing is, Jordan would always tie himself to Phil Jackson. As soon as Phil Jackson was leaving as coach, then Jordan wasn't going to play for anybody else. He didn't want a part of a rebuild. He didn't want to play for Tim Floyd. It was Phil Jackson or he's going to basically retire, which is what ended up happening. And it's interesting how Jerry Reinsdorf made some comments about the fact that Krause was so reviled by some of the players and vice versa in terms of their relationship. Yet he didn't seem to step in. He had the opportunity to obviously fire Jerry Krause if he really wanted to, but he seemed to be okay to let this go on, knowing full well that the dynasty was going to end at the end of that 98 season, if not even prior. So that's, yeah, a strange contrast that why was he happy to let things end when they were still in the midst of that run, albeit at older ages?
I just feel like Jordan's the only guy who's like, you hear that so often, like, oh, Jordan was so competitive, winning is all that mattered. That's washed over me so many times, but he's really the last man standing. Pippen's lost the will to win it in that circumstance. Phil's lost it. And it's just Jordan who's standing there going, I still want to keep playing. I really feel like his retirement this time was begrudging. And we'll see. I guess the other question I kind of had was, what have I got here? Were the Bulls making money? Like, I mean, that might sound ridiculous, but Reinsdorf, as you said, like he was pretty honest, just sort of letting it go. Jordan at this point is absorbing the entire salary cap. The salary cap was $33 million. He's getting 36 in 98. So it's like, were they making money? I imagine they were, but he seems content to think, oh, the Bulls can live on without Jordan and do better. I want an answer to, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think they were probably making a lot in terms of just the sponsorship deals and marketing sort of things and some ancillary things away from on the court. I guess they would have been making a lot of money via the court as well, I suppose, from the people coming in. There are always sellouts at United Center, but given the fact that they were paying an absolute monstrosity of a contract to Jordan, which was deserved, of course.
Of course.
Given he played for so many fewer millions back in the first 10 or so years of his career. He had everything. He deserved everything he was paid for in that final couple of seasons. But Yeah, it's an interesting one of what could have been had egos perhaps sort of allowed to work together, but they were conflicting more than not, and ultimately it led to the downfall or just the disbanding of the entire Bulls dynasty.
I was going to say, the one thing that I really got from this is like how sort of the sort of lovely Southern logic of Jordan and Pippen, like you forget, because they played for Chicago, which is a big city, you really forget that those two guys came from, you know, the South. I'm not sure, Arkansas, I don't really know where it is on the map, but certainly North Carolina is, you know, very country. And the way these guys talk about things, it's almost like Mark Twainian in a way. I don't know if you got that vibe from both of them. And I thought that was really interesting.
Go ahead.
No, please, Adam.
I was going to say, I loved how they actually brought in some of the family members as well. It was great to see Billy Pippen, who, how good was it to see him make an appearance? And his voice is even more majestic than Scotty's somehow. And he's a dead ringer for Scotty as well. If you didn't look at the screen and you could hear his brother talking, it's just incredible. They sound so similar and they look so similar. And then it was also great to see, I think it was Ronnie Jordan, Jordan's older brother.
Yeah.
And then his younger brother, Larry, who he credited even again in the most recent episode 2, I think it was, with being the main reason behind his competitive juices being so intense as they were based on the battles they used to have in the backyard. So I loved seeing the sort of background that they did have with bringing in some of the other family members too. And of course, Jordan's mum, I think, almost stole the show. She was fantastic.
She looks so young.
She really does.
The other thing I found interesting as well, like, the father relationship, both with Pippen, obviously in a very different way, and how that manifested contractually and on court, and then obviously Jordan and his father, and that's no doubt going to be a huge playthrough with the murder and so on and so forth. But just the actual relationship, because I remember George Carl, I don't know if you've read his book recently, I don't know what the title of it was.
Furious George.
Good title. That's a pun. For a pun fan, that's great.
It's all right. I actually said the real one, but it's Furious George.
Furious George. So he put out this book, and in it, he was very heavily criticized for sort of saying something like, Carmelo Anthony was a great player, but came from a single-parent family, a mother-only family, and, you know, wasn't taught how to be a man. I think it was a direct line, which was very heavily criticized. But then this film, while it's so glorifies and celebrates the father-son relationship, especially when Jordan's father's talking about how you know, he'd sort of, Jordan would not be good at handy stuff, and he'd say, get back in the house and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
So yeah. I just found that dichotomy a little bit interesting, where it's you know, Carl sort of says the same thing in a different way and is heavily criticized, kind of rightfully so, but in another way it's celebrated. I found that interesting.
Yeah, that's true. And also the fact that Jordan kept on saying that he was sort of fighting for his father's attention or his father's love and acceptance, how he wanted that to be. I thought that was quite fascinating. And then to show that Larry was more, you know, mechanically minded as opposed to Jordan himself. But yeah, it's interesting how he was always trying to get the sort of one up, I guess, of his brother and just wanted to be accepted in general.
I think the one thing I'm really interested in is like the media pressure and that press conference after 97, when they've won the fifth. He's got the hat on, the champagne's drying, and he's there. Like, there's no joy in his eyes where he's like, listen, I don't want to talk about rebuilding a business. They've won the title for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
It's so crazy. The pressure. And I want to see that we're going to see, no doubt, just the total isolation from, I'm assuming, not only the fans, the teammates, the media, but also maybe even, you know, the team and the players itself. So that is going to be an interesting sort of psychological study into Jordan, I think, with the new footage.
Oh, yeah. It was a really smart choice, I think, to show some of this questioning of the Bulls straight away, even after they've just won that fifth title. And it was setting the scene for the 98 season, but already there was turmoil and suggestions about whether the team will go ahead as it's currently constructed and what would happen. Will Pippen be there still? What's going to happen if Phil Jackson leaves? They couldn't even have a moment to absorb winning the title, their fifth in 7 years, no less. Before the questions start coming thick and fast as to what was going to happen with that last season.
The one bit of footage I really liked was when they're leaving the McDonald's game in Paris, and the opposing player just, he asks for it, but he does just kind of wrench off Jordan's armband.
Yes.
Have you seen that? And I just thought, wow. Yeah. And Jordan, it's like, I don't know if you went to Catholic school or not, but you watch those biblical films where Christ is like getting pulled, he's just pulling stuff up and the crown of thorns goes on. It was honestly like that, where he's just like, he's just laid bare and it's just like, yeah, take it, whatever. I found that And not that it was callous, but I just felt like, wow, this guy's it's coming to a head. Yeah, obviously.
He just basically pointed to the armband and sort of said, "Oh, that can I have that?" And he was basically taking it off before he even asked.
Yeah.
They just held him as players, as opposition players. They were holding him in such high regard. I just played against Jordan. I'm going to take something as a memento, and it turned out to be that wrist, that armband.
That's I'm really excited for the next episodes. I mean, 8 other episodes. I mean, it's such a great idea. And the idea that it's on Netflix, and I think it was about $20 million to make this thing. The next biggest documentary is probably $5 million spent. So it's great to like. How do you like the content of it? I mean, you've seen a lot of NBA entertainment, 45 minutes, but this. How do you like the contrast in the style, in the delivery method?
I think it's fantastic. Yeah, I initially thought, gee, I wonder how they're going to go having it with 10 episodes of almost an hour each. But after watching the first 2 episodes and then barely touching the surface on anything, they've just set the stage beautifully, though, for what's coming. There's 8 hours to go. But it's going to be really intriguing to see what they focus on and what they leave out. But I love the way they're setting it up. I think the editing of it's been fantastic. The things that they would really have to struggle with is what they leave on the cutting room floor or not. Even when they showed one of Jordan's speeches, I think it was during the ring ceremony just before the 98 season began, he says something like, oh, no, it's our 5th title in 7 years. And he goes on to say something about them. If they're ever going to win another title, it'll be this year, referring to 1998. Yet for some reason, that bit of audio and that clip was cut just seconds before he actually said it. And I'm wondering why. Just only for the sake of 5 or 10 seconds, you hear Jordan say exactly his thoughts ahead of this coming season, that hell or high water, they're going to win the 6th title if they ever win any again. So, yeah, it must have been just so difficult for them to say, we'll leave that in, we'll cut that out. So I really feel for the editing and the directors when they look at the all the cuts they have to make, even for such a long 10-hour series.
I mean, it's like they've got, although it's 500 hours, it feels like they've got an acorn's worth of thing and they're trying to make an oak and they're trying to work it around, but they're doing a good job so far and it's super exciting. My last question for you, Adam, is Jordan now. I was a little surprised by his physical condition. His eyes were awful yellow, and that's liver stuff and Billy Rubin. He was in high spirits, but I saw a little bit of a tortured person. What about you? What did you think?
I think that he's just so competitive, and I know this is a narrative that people continue on and on about, but I think once he's gone beyond the point where he can't play anymore, and I just don't know if he's getting the absolute challenges and the things that he wants.
Undernourished.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Like, it must be so difficult. Anywhere he goes, he's adored by basically 99% of the people that he sees. He can't have a normal life, really, except for in isolation with just close friends and family. He wants to still maintain that maniacal edge, but he doesn't have as many opportunities to do that. Obviously, he's trying to get the Hornets franchise up to be a contender, but clearly that hasn't worked all that well thus far. So it's sort of a strange one. You just only those so super close to him will know on the inner circle how tormented he may be, but I certainly think it plays on his mind that he just has so much competitive fire within that he still wants to exercise that as much as possible, and that's why I guess he wants to win at anything he does. So it's a tough one.
Had you heard Jordan cuss before this came out? I think he dropped 2 F-bombs. As much as I've seen him angry, I'd never heard him curse.
No.
I'd seen him mouth it. I mean, we've seen the Reggie Miller fights and that, but I'd never heard it. Certainly not in a setting that casual.
Oh, it's crazy that you just forget that it's unfiltered. And Pippen dropped an F-bomb at one stage, and it's like, what? And hearing Jordan just say it, I think he was referring to Stan Elbeck at one stage back in, they were talking about the 1986, I think it was the game where, they were trying to restrict him on the minutes, and he dropped another F-bomb there, and it's just like, oh my goodness, this is crazy to hear them say this after all these years where it's all filtered and it's all family-friendly. That's, not so family-friendly on some of the things they're saying, but I think it's fantastic to see a different side to someone that you thought you'd known so well and knew so much about. It's just showing them as an honest, open person, and everybody's got their own emotions.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. And next week, what can I say? What's more to say than that? Adam, I'll do it. I'll end it there. That was great, though.
Good on you, mate. It was great chatting to you. And I love talking about this sort of stuff. I believe that later tonight, Lucas, like, what's his name?
Lucas Walker.
He's got that thing going on. I don't know if it's still, I assume it's going ahead. I look forward to it.
If, like, I feel terrible. I balled up my youngest brother and, you know, people who kind of are into it. And I'm like, no, listen, let's chat about it for half an hour. So have you done that to people or what? Here's a question. What work have you got going around this? Surely you've spoken to people much bigger and brighter than I.
Not particularly. I just spoke earlier today as we record this to Steve Cashel, who was a key figure in the 1990s Bulls coverage. He was the TV host of Bulls Game Time, the halftime show, post-game show with Sports Channel TV. And so it was great to get his reflections. He actually appears in the very end of episode 2. He leans over and asks a question of Jordan about Pippen's request for the trade. He just sort of says, what do you make of those earth-shattering comments that Pippen made? Steve Cashel. So I spoke to Steve earlier today. I'm going to be doing a recap series of The Last Dance with my great mate, Aaron. And at the end of each of those episodes, or at least on a few of them, I'm going to be having conversations with some of the people that took place or took part and appeared in the documentary, either through that sort of way or to some of the players themselves. I'm hoping to get back in touch with Bill Winnington to get him on, because he featured a couple of times significantly in episodes 1 and also
He was actually a real sort of storyline anchor, I felt.
Yeah, true. He was definitely one they relied on for numerous comments throughout episode 1 and 2. Hopefully might reconnect with Bill. I've got some grand plans that I'd love to have come to fruition. I know that the Chicago Bulls statistician, or one of, who can also verify the minutes restriction being a bit of a fallacy, he has some incredible insight that I'd hope he might be able to share with me at some stage during this series being aired, because it'll sort of put into question the 7 minutes per half restriction and what really happened, because he sat at the scorer's table for every game during the 80s.
That's a good one.
So I'm hoping to get him on as well.
It certainly seems like Sam Elbert was, you know, ousted because of that. That was the inference. Now, I don't know that that's true or not. Stan Elbert is a one-year coach. I know so little about that year. Little is filtered to me in Australia. What was I going to say on the last thing? Has the podcast had a kick-up? Your podcast in interest?
Yes, it has. I just had a bit of a look at the numbers overnight. They went up a little bit overnight, which is good. So I'm hoping that at least a few people might have got another one or two listens, but no, I think it's gone up a little bit, probably another 10-20% on usual just over one day, which is pretty good given I haven't released a new episode for a week or more. So that's got to be a good thing. So
I mean, after the credit, I know you're not one for self-promotion, but but maybe use that little credit to like say, hey, I'm going to ask you one. I know I say last question, but, and this is one that's going to be interesting. Have you ever asked Jordan's camp for an interview?
No.
I knew it was going to be no. I knew it was going to be no.
Why do you think it was going to be no?
I think
it just, I'm interested.
When I see it in the message, too humble. Not too humble, but humble. I think also it's like Holy Grail syndrome. It's like once you touch it, forbidden fruit. Do you want to taste it? Do you not want to taste it? Yeah. I don't know.
It's a great question, mate. And I wasn't saying it to try and challenge you. I just thought it was interesting to hear. Now, I've never tried to get Jordan on the show. I've never asked one of his confidants or close friends. And I've had numerous of his close friends on the show. I've never sort of just said, can you just connect me to Mike on the sly here and I'll get in touch with him. He's never done a podcast ever, as far as I'm aware.
No. I mean, I think you're swimming upstream a little bit.
Mate, absolutely. Like he barely appears on live TV these days. I think when he appeared on, was it Good Morning America, just in the lead up to episode 1 and 2 of this series airing, that was his first appearance on a live interview for possibly years. I can't even recall the last time he did a live interview. Yeah, that'd be Holy Grail sort of stuff, but I have not put the word out and I don't see myself doing so anytime soon, but you never know, mate. Down the track, you never know.
Interesting psychological examination.